Hello and welcome to this special new mini-series I'm calling Chess Pieces. Welcome to the Beyond podcast and this ongoing little series of explorations looking at a game at chess. This isn't like any of the other exploring sessions we do where we just sort of read through and pause and get a general shape of things. We're drilling down because we are down to do a full cast audio adaptation of A Game at Chess. And it's a difficult play to adapt. So we're getting a couple of interested parties in the room to read through bits, discuss adaptation, because this is a text that will require for audio adaptation. And that's a dirty word for some people. No, leave the text exactly as it was. Don't change a word. No. But we're going to have to make some adjustments. I'm hoping to be able to leave the majority of the play as is, but I'm looking at interesting questions of spin as well. Some of the text is a little problematic in terms of the politics of the time, the politics now. Are there better analogues? And all sorts of questions that will arise as we go, so that when we go to record, that we've got the best of all possible worlds. For the purists, there will be a complete plain text version of the play recorded. It just won't have all the production values. So don't worry, we will record it all. It just will be a bit flatter than the super deluxe souped up adaptation version. To help explore the opening of A Game at Chess, we're doing looking at the induction, the prologue, and a little bit of Act 1, Scene 1. We have these wonderful people joining us. So please introduce yourself to the world.
Hi, I'm Greg, and I live near Stratford-on-Avon, and I'm really excited to get my teeth into this one.
My name is Lindsay, and I'm an actor, and I live in Scotland.
And I'm your host, Robert Crichton. Do all the Beyond Shakespeare things to a probably slightly unhealthy degree. So without further ado, we're going to start just reading through the opening of this play. If you want to know what A Game of Chess is about, it's about a chess game. At its simplest, there is a great deal of satire going on about events preceding the time it was written. About the court of James and stuff to do with matches with people in Spain. None of which a modern audience is going to know about. And I don't think even a percentage of the audience will know anything about that. So what you need to know, I think, at this stage, by the end of the session, I may be proved wrong, is that this is a battle between a white team and a black team. Though we might change the colour scheme. I have a reason for that later on. And they have spies. And they're trying to co-opt spies from the other side. So maybe we should think less of the politics of the time, and maybe we should be thinking more about spy genre from the Cold War period. That's sort of what's currently in my head as to what might be a better way of looking at this, rather than talking about the religious conflict that's going on here. Because the opening of the play starts with Ignatius Loyola and Error. And Ignatius is one of these dastardly Jesuits that at the time Protestants would not have been desperately keen on, who is there undermining good Protestant values of England, etc., which is slightly problematic for us today as a starting point. I think he was a Jesuit. He's definitely, in the general area of that, Catholic and Spaniard. And Error is, well, Error. So the induction begins with these two having a bit of a conflab about politics and things, and we're just saying some of this is probably a bit too tricky to get at a first read, so we're going to read through it twice. So I'm going to ask Lindsay, could you be Ignatius, please? And Greg, if I could ask you to be Error. Don't be afraid too much at this stage of knowing what's going on. We're going to dig into it and try and find an answer, and if we really hate what we just did, we'll just quietly delete it and pretend that the second take was our first take. So Error is discovered asleep later on, possibly. But we have definitely Ignatius Loyola appearing.
Where? What angle of the world is this that I can neither see the politic face nor with my refined nostrils taste the footsteps of any my disciples, sons and heirs, as well of my designs as institution? I thought they had spread over the world by this time, covered the earth's face and made dark the land like the Egyptian grasshoppers. Here's too much light appears, shot from the eyes of truth and goodness, never yet deflowered. Sure, they were never here. Then is their monarchy imperfect yet? A just reward, I see, for their ingratitude so long to me, their father and their founder. 'Tis not 5 years since I was sainted by 'em. Where slept mine honour all the time before? Could they be so forgetful to canonize their prosperous institutor? When they had sainted me, they found no room in all their calendar to place my name that should have removed princes, pulled the most eminent prelates by the roots up for my dear coming to make way for me. Let every petty martyr and saint homily, roch, mane, and petronil, itch and ague curers, your abbess Aldegund and Cunegund, the widow Marcel, Parson Polycarp, Cecily and Ursula, all take place of me. And but for the bisextile, or leap year, and that's but 1 in 3, I fall by chance into the 29th day of February. There were no room else for me. See their love, their conscience too, to thrust me, a lame soldier, into leap year. My wrath's up. And methinks I could with the first syllable of my name blow up their colleges. Up, error, wake, father of supererogation, rise, it is Ignatius calls thee Loyola.
What have you done? Oh, I could sleep in ignorance immortally. The slumber is so pleasing. I saw the bravest setting for a game now that ever mine eye fixed on.
What game, prithee?
Oh, the noblest game of all, a game at chess betwixt our side and the White House. The men set in their just order, ready to go to it.
Were any of my sons placed for the game?
Yes, and a daughter too, a secular daughter that plays the Black Queen's pawn. He, the Black Bishop's.
If ever power could show a mastery in thee, let it appear in this.
Oh, it's but a dream, a vision, you must think.
I cannot what, so I behold the children of my cunning and see what rank they keep.
And music plays, and we have enter severally the White House and the Black House, as in the order of the game.
You have your wish. Behold, there's the full number of the game, kings and their pawns, queens, bishops, knights, and dukes.
Dukes? They're called rooks by some.
Ah! Corruptedly, rock the word, custode de la roche, the keeper of the forts, in whom both kings repose much confidence, and for their trust's sake, courage and worth do well deserve those titles.
The answer's high. I see my son and daughter.
Those are two pawns, the Black Queens and Black Bishops.
Pawns argue but poor spirits and slight preferments, not worthy of the name of my disciples. If I had stood so nigh, I would have cut that bishop's throat, but I'd have had his place, and told the queen a love tale in her ear would make her best pulse dance. There's no elixir of brain or spirit amongst them.
Why? Would you have them play against themselves? That's quite against the rule of game, Ignatius.
Pish! I would rule myself, not observe rule.
Oh, why then you'd play a game all by yourself?
I would do anything to rule alone. It's rare to have the world reigned in by one.
See them anon and mark them in their play. Observe as in a dance they glide away.
And exit the two houses.
Oh, with what longings will this breast be tossed until I see this great game won and lost.
And thus ends the induction. There's stuff in there that is straightforward, useful exposition, and then there's stuff where you're going, okay, struggling to follow, and especially when it's so early on. It's really helpful that we have, you know, lines like, those are two pawns, the Black Queens and the Black Bishops, because, they're quite important. Black Queen's pawn and the Black Bishop's pawn, I think, are the first two antagonists to the White Queen's pawn in the scene that's about to follow. So that's useful. That's useful exposition. We can use that. There's a nice way that they talk to each other that I'd like to reuse and repurpose later on, and if we can keep some of this sense of stuff. Basically, when they start talking to each other, it works quite well. But we have this massive speech, well, I say it's massive, not that long actually, from Ignatius, which loses us, I think it is fair to say. Lindsay, did you have a clue what you were saying most of the time?
I kind of was grasping dimly and darkly up until the point of Roche, Maine, and Petronil, Itch and Ague Cures and all that. And I was thinking, what's going on here? Is he saying that he's been canonized, but his saint's day only comes in a leap year because his saint's day is the 29th of February? And I was like, is that even right? I don't even know if that's right.
I think you're pretty much bang on there. They're going off on things of various other potential saints who are all a bit dodgy. I mean, he wasn't canonized on a leap year, but or it might have been a leap year, but it certainly wasn't on a leap day or anything confusing like that. He was canonized on the 12th of March, I think that's a perfectly standard day. A couple of years before this, so he was beatified in 1609, and then canonized several years later in 1622. So he's complaining about that. Now, honestly, I don't think we stand a chance in hell of getting any of that across unless we give everyone a little lecture in advance. I like the... Because what I like from Ignatius at the beginning is talking about... it's slightly problematic in its original conception, but I like the idea that he's talking about spreading his power over the world, like Egyptian grasshoppers. You know, this idea that he is some sort of spy master who is there to spread the power of his side across the world is quite nice. Especially when later on there's this thing about you would have your people play against themselves. It's like what kind of game are you playing here? Surely black and should fight white and white and should fight black, and you know, you've got people playing against themselves. You know, he's playing a dangerous, confusing game. So I think there's a lot here that in an adaptation could survive in audio. I'm not 100% certain whether I'd want to try and keep that for a full cast show or not. I don't know whether that's a step too far or not.
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. I was just sort of scanning a bit and thinking, is there a decent chunk of sort of 6 or 8 lines of that we could take out, where then we still would have the point that he's, you know, he's angry that, you know, he's been marginalized into a leap year, even though this isn't historically accurate, but, you know, he's been marginalized into a leap year, therefore his saint's day presumably, I mean, he says 1 in 3 years, but actually it's, sorry. Oh, beg your pardon. I thought I had my notifications off. Right. So sorry. I don't know how to, I've got a new laptop and I don't know how to turn them off. I'm sorry. Anyway, I just, you know, so that you get this sort of, it's a nice character thing in a way, that he sort of comes on a bit sort of disgruntled that, you know, nobody thinks his importance is such that it is, and that kind of thing. So I don't know whether there's a little kind of incision we could do. For my dear coming to make way for me, and but for the bisextile or leap year, and that's but 1 in 3, I fall by chance into the 9 and 20th day of February. I mean, I don't know if that would work, really. That's taken out about 6 lines, all those.
I was thinking of being a bit meaner on him, actually. Okay. I was thinking of taking quite a lot more out than that. Whether I, you know, it's a nice character note, but whether it actually adds anything, or rather than just simply straightforwardly confuses people, that if we just start off with, you know, my designs as institution covering the earth's face, like made dark the land, and then somewhere around there, you broadly speaking take most of it out, and just go straight up to into up error. And just get straight into it.
So maybe sort of shot from the eyes of truth and goodness, never yet deflowered, sure they were never here. Then is their monarchy unperfect yet? A just reward I see for their ingratitude so long to me, their father and founder. I mean, you could sort of end it sort of anywhere.
In that sort of area, yeah.
In that sort of area. And then, yeah, cut straight to up air awake.
I could be even more radical. You know, unperfect yet, up error awake, and then we've almost got a vaguely. I don't think it scans, but you're almost vaguely keeping the line in place as an option. Again, we're not having to make absolute decisions now. I'm sure people will be calling up our name in horror. But yeah, in that sense of Ignatius has a real axe to grind here. And then we get into this description. I love the stuff about the you know, we have kings and their pawns, queens, bishops, and dukes, and then this thing. The dukes, they're not called dukes. Rooks, haven't you played chess before?
Yes, apologies to the French for killing their language at that point.
Sure, I'm sure they can cope.
I love error. I actually love that first speech. And as you say, once you get to error, it works pretty much. My biggest problem was that I love the fact that he says that plays the Black Queen's pawn, he the bishops. It sounds gorgeous and it works. But the problem is, I have no bleeding idea who the bleeding and he's talking about. Well, apart from these two characters that are over there.
Yeah, I mean that is one of those questions about, you know, the problem of the medium. On a live stage, it's straightforward. Literally, you can be pointing these people out, and actually, it feels almost too short. It feels like there should be a bit more actual straightforward exposition stuff going on.
And it sort of depends, though, in terms of a staging, not necessarily an audio production, but a staging. Of how choreographed and elaborate, and what costumes all the chess pieces are playing, because this obviously makes it much easier visually for an audience to see what that is. But I mean, this might be an early question, inappropriately early question, but would you need to understand the rules of chess in order to understand this play?
I don't think so. I don't recall off the top of my head that being desperately, you need to vaguely understand that you take pieces. I think that's all you really need to know. You've got to remember also in the play, players cheat and change sides. Okay. And that's sort of hinted at by what Error Ignatius are talking about when he's sort of going, you're playing the game wrong. And that's why I'm sort of thinking on that sort of Cold War front, because you have sort of turncoats, so you have I'm trying to remember the words. What is it? Double agents. That's the one. Yes. It's like words. There are double agents and there are the triple agents, and there's sort of this playing back and forth.
Very random thought occurring to me. If we had that in a staged performance, you could maybe, you know how on Drag Race sometimes the drag queens will sort of do something and they'll reveal a different outfit. So that could be fun. I mean, to do that, have that kind of slightly campy aspect to it as well, maybe.
Mm. Oh yeah, I think there's a lot of room for camp in this. I think that's definitely an option, especially before we get to the porn scene, in both senses of the word. Mm-hmm. Let's read this again. With that in mind, we'll swap roles, whichever one you were before, swap it round, read the other one. We won't worry about doing any cuts yet or anything like that. We'll just see how it runs and get a little bit of a sense of it again.
Where? What angle of the world is this that I can neither see the politic face nor with my refined nostrils taste the footsteps of any my disciples, sons and heirs as well of my designs as institution? I thought they had spread over the world by this time, covered the earth's face and made dark the land like the Egyptian grasshoppers. Too much light appears, shot from the eyes of truth and goodness, never yet deflowered. Sure, they were never here. Then is their monarchy unperfect yet? A just reward I see for their ingratitude so long to me, their father and their founder. It is not 5 years since I was sainted by them. Where slept mine honour all the time before? Could they be so forgetful to canonise their prosperous institutor? When they had sainted me, they found no room in all their calendar to place my name that should have removed princes, pulled the most eminent prelates by the roots up for my dear Kami to make way for me, that every petty martyr and saint homily, rock, mane, and petronel, itch, and ague curers, your abbess Aldegund and Cunegund, the white widow Marcel, Parson Polycarp, Cecily, and Ursula, all take place of me. But for the bisextile or leap year, and that's but one in three, I fall by chance into the 29th day of February. There were no room else for me. See their love, their conscience too, to thrust me, a lame soldier, into leap year. My wrath's up, and methinks I could, with the first syllable of my name, blow up their colleague. Jeez. Up, Error, awake, father of subrogation, rise, it is Ignatius calls thee, Loyola.
What have you done? Oh, I could sleep in ignorance immortally. The slumber is so pleasing. I saw the bravest setting for a game now that ever mine eye fixed on.
What game, prithee?
The noblest game of all, a game at chess betwixt our side and the White House. The men set in their just order, ready to go toot.
Were any of My son's placed for the game.
Yes, and a daughter too, a secular daughter that plays the Black Queen's pawn. He, the Black Bishop's.
If ever power could show a mastery in thee, let it appear thus.
It's but a dream, a vision, you must think.
I care not. So I behold the children of my cunning and see what rank they keep.
You have your wish. Behold, there's the full number of the game. Kings and their pawns, queens, bishops, knights and dukes.
Dukes. They're called rooks by some.
Corruptedly. Le Roc, the word. Custode de la Roche. The keeper of the forts, in whom both kings repose much confidence, and for their trust's sake, courage and worth, do well deserve those titles.
The answer's high. I see my son and daughter.
Those are two pawns, the Black Queens and Black Bishops.
Pawns argue, but poor spirits and slight preferments, not worthy of the name of my disciples. If I had stood so nigh, I would have cut that bishop's throat, but I'd have had his place and told the queen a laughter in her ear would make her best pulse dance. There's no elixir of a brain or spirit to monster.
Why would you have them play against themselves? That's quite against the rule of game, Ignatius.
Pish, I would rule myself, not observe rule.
Why, then you'd play a game all by yourself.
I would do anything to rule alone. It's rare to have the world reined in by one.
See 'em anon and mark 'em in their play. Observe as in a dance, they glide away.
Oh, with what longings will this breast be tossed until I see this great game won and lost.
And yeah, there's more coming up. There's more things I'm liking. I think I may have noted this before, but just going with my Cold War analogy, the other side does have the White House, which does mean that I'm starting to think we should just change it from black pieces to red pieces. And that won't destroy the scansion too much. I think that just about holds its place, and that mm-hmm. means that also the two sides have different accents.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would help in this
action. Yeah, that would. Then we can have Cold Russian. Yes.
Oh. Oh no.
Everyone will sound like they're trying to sell. Compare the meerkat toys. probably the best, as far as the accent goes. Sequels. But that, and then, well, I mean, it doesn't have to. I think the way we could go with different Western forces. So the white pieces could also, we could have some English mixed in with American accents there. I think that would work quite nicely. I'm liking that as a thought. How is clarity for people? How did people feel about that going through it this time? Now that it's unfair because now we're starting to know what's going on.
I felt I got more out of it that time. I still, that first speech is still utterly needs a good, pretty good cut. But I really love the interaction from then onwards. And I think there's an element, I think Ignatius, and we proved it tonight, you could play it we've already played it two very different ways, I think, in some ways. I love the almost conjuring. I think I was, by the end of it, I was sort of almost thinking, though error conjures the dream. I think Ignatius almost has this conjuring element too.
I didn't really quite see that really clearly the first time, but I see it clearly now, obviously reading it cold, that Era's woken up from a dream in which this is happening, and then Era is able to manifest the vision of his dream into a kind of dumb show, which is what's happening. It was reminding me slightly, probably wrongly and badly, but I was just thinking of Faust and Mephistopheles and the sort of parade of characters that Mephistopheles conjures for Faust, I believe, in at least one version of that. It just sort of, you know, I wondered whether, you know, I think this is later than that, and I wondered whether everybody thought, well, that was a good trick. Let's put that in a play.
Well, I think we've got a lot of processionary kind of stuff has happened, before this is feeding off from. I mean, it's sort of a history play, but it's incredibly recent history play under the guise. That idea that in a live production you would have that visual spectacle of all the chess pieces come on stage, and you know, which is a lot of actors, by the way. But if you have all the chess pieces, that's one of the reasons why this play doesn't get done. It's quite expensive.
You do it with people holding two cardboard cutouts, one in either hand, so one person is three. I don't know if that works with 12, isn't it, per side? So is it 12? Yeah. Or is it? No, it's not.
It's 16 per side. 16. Yeah. So 32. In theory, it's 32. I mean, there aren't that many characters, but it's not small either. It's very difficult to do this play because ideally you want the better part of 20 people. Because there are several scenes where both sides just turn up and parley all at the same time, and it's a massive pain. Even though most of the scenes are actually quite small, most of them are self-contained, which is actually a plus for audio. And the idea is that effectively, one of the reasons I want to cut a certain amount of Ignatius is I want a certain amount of spare dialogue that I might be able to cannibalize and slightly rework that still feels a bit Middletonian for when we bring Ignatius and Era back on every so often at the beginning of a scene. Because again, there aren't that many scenes either. It's a relatively small number of scenes. It's about 12, something like that, depending on how you define them. Mm-hmm. And so if they can come up just to come into the mic and go, the black bishop's pawn, something descriptive about that person so you can remember who the hell it is, has come on to do something like that, but something that's in character and doesn't feel too jarring. So there's an element of wanting to trim that out. I just want to go back up just before the induction. We've got two random bits of stuff. One is the prologue. One is a bit of description from the printing of the play, which probably isn't Middleton, but I'm just interested to see if there's material here that feels like we could put into somebody else's mouth.
Can I just throw a thought in before we go back?
Okay. Yeah.
From the point of view of playing it now, I think the two speeches that stood out to me as almost being key to the characters, and you're probably going to disagree with them. One is Ignatius's pawns argue, but poor spirits. Which I thought was a really interesting speech, and I love the last two lines. And actually, Era's the last one before the exit, before the houses go. Because I think that if you're doing audio, you can't see them dancing. Mm-hmm. But an element of that I think music would have to become key and almost like a theme.
Well, it's both houses. Also, sound design. You know, if we can, we've almost got literal pawns scraping from side to side. Or I've got an electronic chess set that makes bleeping noises, and I'm wondering if there's a way of keying that in, especially if we're going for a sort of, say, because it would sort of fit Perestroika quite well. So we could have late 80s game music style music. You know, I don't think we'd go full da 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 da
da da da da da da da da da
da da da da da da three stages of what we're doing here. So we're looking to do the audio adaptation, which will have to be changed.
Yes.
We're looking to find a sort of compilation version. So the best of scenes with narration that we can do as a live show with a relatively small cast, which would be a fundraising show. and then the fundraiser leads to doing the show fully. And then the decision is, the question there is, you know, doing the show fully with all the visuals, actually, can you just basically leave it as it is, you know, with cuts for time and, you know, the usual kind of minor cuts one makes, rather than what we're doing here, which is much more invasive because of what we have to do. So, you know, it's a matter of thinking about it several ways at the same time, which is, you know, just... My cruelty to you.
I was just wondering about also maybe like in the audio version, whether I always get this acronym wrong. ASMR? No. What is it?
ASMR.
ASMR. Mm. Whether there's an aspect of that even though the characters aren't speaking in this sort of conjured up dance / dumb show with music, there could be other aural indications of their presence possibly.
I absolutely agree. I'm all over the sound design element of things. I'm really interested in that, and actually Ignatius and Aerith actually are very ASMR-y, because they will be the people who will be leaning into the mics and going, aha, my cunning plan to do this is going well, kind of narration, which may get some tingles. Let's see if we can get some tingles out of the audience. Of course, as a dramatist, I would then insist that the next thing would be quite loud, and not loud, but jarring from that effect, because I don't want the audience falling asleep. So we've got these two bits of text. I'm just interested in just to get it in our heads, to see whether there's anything. It's a bit too prosaic. I don't think it probably would work in either of these characters' mouths. But let's just do them one. So one is to go with the picture that went with the original printing. I'll ask Lindsay to read that, and then I'll ask Greg if you could read the actual prologue for the actual production.
A game at chess is here displayed between the black and white house maid, wherein crown-thirsting policy for the black house by fallacy to the white knight check often gives, and to some straits him thereby drives. The fat black bishop helps also, with faithless heart to give the blow. Yet, more grey all their craft, at length, the white knight, with wit wondrous strength, and circumspective prudency, gives checkmate by discovery to the black knight. And so, at last, the game thus won, the black house cast into the bag, and therein shut, find all their plumes and coxcombs cut. Plain dealing thus, by wisdom's guide, defeats the cheats of craft and pride.
What of the game called chess play can be made to make a stage play? Shall this day be played? First, you shall see the men in order set, states and their pawns when both the sides are met, the houses well distinguished. In the game, some men entrapped and taken to their shame, rewarded by their play. And in the close, you shall see checkmate given to virtue's foes. But the fairest jewel that our hopes can deck is so to play our game, to avoid your check.
Yeah. Neither of them fit the voice. Neither of them are doing. But they do. I do quite like that prologue. It's quite good. It explains the setup.
Yes.
Before.
I love it. It was just like, wow. So much encapsulated in such a short prologue. Yeah. And in the close, you shall see checkmate given to virtue's foes. Yeah, you don't want the virtue's foes with the idea you've got probably as much, but I love the, and in the close, you shall see checkmate. But also, we don't want to cause your check. It was a fabulous last image. Loved it.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just a straightforward prologue introductory thing that we just keep as a prologue.
I like the image of the bag.
Yeah, introducing the bag, because at the end of the play, spoilers, at the end of the play, all the bad pieces get put in the bag. at the end. So they get check taken and they get put in the bag. And it's again, we're going to have a lot of fun with the sound design there, just muffled thing, and, you know, especially when the fat bishop gets in and everyone goes, oh, get off!
oh, yes.
It is fun. Lindsay.
Yeah, just the other thing possibly, I don't know if this is just a mad idea, but with a slight bit of adjustment, the prologue could also work as an epilogue. Because the last two lines is kind of like that, you know, please applaud now, you know, in a way. So I don't know whether that's another, you know, alternative in terms of sort of, you know, moving things about, whether it's a short summary of what has just been seen, and we hope you liked it.
Yeah, I mean, there is an epilogue by the White Queen's Pawn. But I don't know whether it's better or worse. I like that's the option. I mean, that's the thing, is the question of who would record it, which voice. I mean, it would be one of the actors within the play, but if we're keeping it separate as a prologue rather than trying to give it to one of these sort of prologue-y figures like Era or Ignatius, then, you know, it needs to be someone who doesn't appear for half an hour, just so that their voice is kept suitably separate from the rest of the team. I mean, the picture plainly explained, there might be some little lines I could nick out of that, but I don't think so. It's a bit too didactic. It's just, here is this thing with something, which is what it's for. It's not by, it's almost certainly not by Middleton. It's just a thing that was written to go with the picture.
It's a bit moralising at the end as well, you know. Mm.
It does mention the bag. That's quite nice.
It does mention the bag.
It does mention the bag. So maybe there's an... But the other thing is also the audio adaptation would almost certainly be in episodes. So it might be that I can use bits of both of those as little pre-thing intros, which again could, if in that context, they might end up therefore being Ignatius or Error because they'd be a continuing force in the audio adaptation. Okay, I think we've got a handle on that. I think we now need to get to the other question, which is, when we actually start doing the play, do we have a clue what's going on as we go to Act 1, Scene 1, and get a sense of how that flows and whether there's any adjustments we might want to make to that. We're not going to make any final decisions here. In coming weeks, I will make some cuts as we go, and some maybe minor adjustments, and we will stress test to see whether that works. And I may ask people to do accents. I won't ask you to do accents now, unless you feel like it. But I'm feeling that the black team, or the red team, as I'm now thinking of them, might have to have Eastern COD Eastern European, and the white team, English and or American. I want to try and figure out a logic, whether there's a sort of, because if it was an English spy thing, then you would have Americans coming, you know, the CIA coming over and sort of messing things up and having more money and stepping on their toes in various ways. If there's a relationship logic within the play that would fit that, then I'd be quite keen on exploring that. But again, that might be trying to overlay too much onto a text at this stage. This could be a terrible idea that we immediately dump. Answers on a postcard if you're listening to this. We haven't recorded it yet if you're listening to this relatively live. Anyway, we're going to dive into Act 1, Scene 1. And actually, I'm going to read something now because there's three people talk. So I'm going to play the Black Queen's Pawn. Greg, if I could ask you to read the Black Bishop's Pawn. Oh. You're not a nice chap.
Oh.
And you are, yeah, I think you could say you are a special agent, I think is fair to say. If the bishops run the spies, you are the agent in the field. And Lindsay, if you could be the White Queen's Pawn, and I think it would be fair to say you are the mark.
Meaning?
He's going to try and turn you.
So I'm the target.
The target, in more ways than one. So yeah, who am I? I'm the Black Queen's pawn. This is the other problem of reading the scripts. When we come to do the scripts, I will just give everyone numbers because you will not be able to read this script because it just drive you entirely up the wall because nobody has names. This is the other question. Do we start giving characters names? We can give them slightly different names. There are different routes how we might do that. At the moment, let's just see how it flows.
I so wish I'd got my Thomas Middleton big copy with me because it tells me who everyone is.
It does, and in it does give people different versions of the names, but they just make the names longer. So yeah, so the collected Middleton, which weighs a ton and is currently my table is wobbling, says that the Black Queen's pawn is renamed as the Jesuitess Black Queen's pawn, which is sort of helpful when you're reading it. Whereas the White Queen's pawn is down as the Virgin White Queen's pawn, which is not something you'd say to someone's face, I think. In the same way, the Black Bishop's pawn is down as the Jesuit Black Bishop's pawn, which again, in our adaptation, may not be actually very helpful, but it might be helpful to you have in your mind. Anyway, I will be a Jesuitess according to that version, but I will read off this version. I have several versions in front of me. I may get confused. So we have a meeting between the White Queen's pawn and the Black Queen's pawn. So also you could think of it on a sort of upstairs, downstairs level. We are the lady's maid to queens. We are. That's what we are. I ne'er see that face, but my pity rises when I behold so clear a masterpiece of heaven's art, wrought out of dust and ashes, and at next thought to give her lost eternally in being not ours, but the daughter of heresy. My soul bleeds at mine eyes.
Where should truth speak if not in such a sorrow? Their tears, plainly. Beshrew me, if she weep not heartily, what is my peace to her to take such pains in't? If I wander to loss, and with broad eyes yet miss the path she can run blindfold in through often exercise, why should my oversight, though in the best game that e'er Christian lost, raise the least spring of pity in her eyes? It's doubtless a great charity, and no virtue could win me surer.
Blessed things prevail with't. If ever goodness made a gracious promise, it is in yonder look. What little pains would build a fort for virtue to all memory in that sweet creature were the groundwork firmer.
It hath been all my glory to be firm in what I have professed.
That is the enemy that steals your strength away and fights against you, disarms your soul even in the heat of battle. Your firmness that way makes you more infirm for the right Christian conflict. There I spied a zealous primitive sparkle, but now flew from your devoted eye, able to blow up all heresies that ever sat in council with your spirit. Here comes he whose sanctimonious breath will make that spark a flame. List to him, virgin, at whose first entrance princes will fall prostrate. Women are weaker vessels.
By my penitence, a comely presentation, and the habit to admiration reverend.
But the heart lady, so meek that, as you see, good charity pictured still, with young ones in her arms, so will he cherish all his young, tractable, sweet, obedient daughters, even in his bosom, in his own dear bosom. I am myself a secular Jesuitess, as many ladies are of worth and greatness. A second sort are Jesuits in voto, giving their vow unto the General Father, that's the Black Bishop of our house, whose pawn this gentleman now stands for, to receive the college habit at his holy pleasure.
But how are those in voto employed, lady, till they receive the habit?
Oh, they are not idle. He finds them all true labourers in the work of the universal monarchy, which he and his disciples principally aim at. Those are maintained in many courts and palaces, and are induced by noble personages into great princes' services, and prove some councillors of state, some secretaries, all serving in notes of intelligence, as parish clerks their mortuary bills to our... the General Father. So are designs oft times prevented, and important secrets of states discovered, yet no author found, but they suspected oft that are most sound. This mystery is too deep yet for your entrance, and I offend to set your seal so back. Checked by obedience, with desire to hasten your progress to perfection, I commit you to the great worker's hands, to whose grave worth I fit my reverence, as to you, my wishes.
Dost find her supple?
There's a little passage made.
Let me contemplate with holy wonder season my access, and my degrees approach the sanctuary of unmatched beauty, set in grace and goodness. Not the daughters of men I have not found a more catholical aspect. Oh, that I doth promise single life and meek obedience. Upon those lips the sweet fresh buds of youth, the holy dew of prayer lies, like pearl dropped from the opening eyelids in the morn upon the bashful rose. Oh, how beauteously a gentle fast, not rigorously imposed, would look, upon that cheek. And how delightfully the courteous physic of a tender penance, whose utmost cruelty should not exceed the first fear of a bride, to beat down frailty would work to sound health your long festered judgment, and make your merit, which though erring in ignorance, appears but spotted righteousness to me. Oh, far clearer than the innocence of infants.
To that good work I bow, and will become obedience humblest daughter, since I find the assistance of a sacred strength to aid me. The labor is as easy to serve virtue the right way, since 'tis she I ever served in my desire, though I transgressed in judgment.
That's easily absolved amongst the rest. You shall not find the virtue that you serve now a sharp and cruel mistress. Her ears open to all your supplications. You may boldly and safely let in the most secret sin into her knowledge, which, like vanished man, never returns into the world again. Fate locks not up more truly.
To the guilty, that may appear some benefit.
Who's so innocent that never stands in need on it in some kind? If ever thought were blabbed that so confessed, the very air we breathe would be unblessed. Now to the work indeed, which is to catch her inclination. As the special use we make of all our practice in all kingdoms, so no, for by discovering their most secret frailties, things which once ours, they must not hide from us. That's the first article in the creed we teach them. Finding to what point their blood most inclines, know best to apt them to our desire. A daughter, the sooner you disperse your errors, the sooner you make haste to your recovery. You must part with them. To be nice or modest towards this good action is to imitate the bashfulness of one conceals an ulcer. For the uncomely parts the tumour vexes, till it be past cure. Resolve you thus far, lady. The privatest thought that runs to hide itself into the most secret corner of your heart now must be a my acquaintance, so familiarly never she friend of your night councils near.
I stand not much in fear of any action guilty of that black time, most noble holiness. I must confess, as in a sacred temple, thronged with an auditory, some come rather to feed on human object than to taste of angels' food. So in the congregation of quick thoughts, which are more infinite than such assemblies, I cannot with truth's safety speak for all. Some have been wanderers, some fond, some sinful, but those found ever but poor entertainment. They had small encouragement to come again. The single life which strongly I profess now, heaven pardon me, I was about to part from.
Then you have passed through love?
But left no stain. In all my passage, sir, no print of wrong for the most chaste maid that may trace my footsteps.
How came you off so clear?
I was discharged by an inhuman accident, which modesty forbids me put any language to.
How? You forgot yourself? All actions clad in their proper language, though most sordid, my ear is bound by duty to let in and lock up everlastingly. Shall I help you? He was not found to answer his creation. A vestal virgin in a slip of grace could not deliver man's loss modestly. 'Twas the white bishop's pawn.
The same, blessed sir.
Heretic, well pickled.
By base treachery and violence prepared by his competitor, the black knight's pawn, whom I shall ever hate for it.
Oh, 'twas of revenge is the unmanliest way that ever rival took. A villainy that for your sake I'll never absolve him of.
I wish it not so heavy.
He must feel it. I never yet gave absolution to any crime of that unmanning nature. It seems that you refused him for defect, letting you stand up pure from the desire that other women have in ends of marriage. Pardon my boldness if I sift your goodness to the last grain.
I reverence your pains, sir, and must acknowledge custom to enjoy what other women challenge and possess more ruled me than desire. For my desires dwell all in ignorance, and I'll never wish to know that fond way may redeem him thence.
I never was so taken, beset doubly now with that judgment, what a strength it puts forth. I bring work nearer to you. When you've seen a masterpiece of man composed by heaven for a great prince's favour, kingdom's love, so exact envy could not find a place to stick a blot on person or on fame. Have you not found ambition swell your wish then and desire stir your blood?
By virtue, never. I've only in the dignity of the creature admired the maker's glory.
Jeez. Impregnable. Second siege must not fall off so tame. She's one of those must be informed to know a daughter's duty which some take untaught. Ooh, her modesty brings her behindhand much. My old means I must fly to. Yes, 'tis it. Please you peruse this small tract of obedience. It will help you forward well.
Sir, that's a virtue I've ever thought on with a special reverence.
You were conceived by that my power, your duty.
The knowledge will be precious of both, sir.
And there we'll pause, because then we start having more characters than we can comfortably deal with this small room. Okay, I'll ask Lindsay first. Do you know what's going on?
It seems like, obviously, like a seduction. There's a lot of, I was constantly reminded by the language of, S&M, really. I mean, there's a lot of those kinds of references. So, there's a virginal, unspotted, steadfast, strong, and articulate, and presumably female character here, mm-hmm. who's being beset, sort of softened up by one and now beset by the other.
Who is, of course, in theory, just talking about religion. Of course, that's what he's talking about.
Just talking about religion.
Now, there's a quite important point. There's an important point which is really well hidden in the dialogue. It's the kind of thing where on a live production, people will be doing gestures. But it's one of those problems of just going, Middleton, could you just spit it out and explain what's happening? Because it's quite annoying. So you have this stuff about how, the single life, which strongly I profess now, I was about to part from.
Yeah.
I.e. you're about to get married.
Yeah.
Now, do you know why you didn't get married from the speech you just did or what he said back at you?
He said something about you still desired, but you found the object of your love had a defect. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, I missed whatever that was, because I didn't know that that's what I was saying. No,
unfortunately, modesty forbade you to put any language to it. This is the problem, is that you never actually say out loud. It is explained in a moment, but basically your intended got gelded. It's quite an important point that isn't really very well explained at this point. So
my intended got gelded. So what, like castrated, you mean? Well, okay. Well, that would presumably, well, then I suppose, I guess, why then get married if you can't have children, I suppose, in the logic of this, so...
Yeah, so here's the thing. You're in a sense, you're turning to God. Yeah, you know, you were going to get married, and you're turning to this other confession, and that's what's going on. So it is a kind of seduction. I mean, it's both twofold. In a sense, it's instructional from the Black Bishop's pawn. He also kind of wants you.
Mm-hmm. That's it. She says, I was discharged by an inhuman accident. Yes, I think I read that without having any idea.
Yeah. I mean, the Black Bishop's pawn, vaguely, of that unmanning nature, that's as close, I think, to it being explained. It will get explained more explicitly in a moment after people enter, because it's there's the gelder and the gelded enter.
Mm-hmm.
So the person who did the gelding and the person who was gelded. I'm not quite sure. I can't remember off the top of my head how this came about or why or what the reason for this. We've gone through this process to just explicate the fact that it's incredibly difficult to know what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think the tone and the dynamic between the characters is very clear in the language, but the actual plot plot specifics aren't, maybe.
And it may be that it actually can be solved by some of the people who will come on later in the scene, maybe having them saunter in and out earlier and actually have you reacting to seeing him, and that may help. I also just think that just less of it may help, of actually just getting to the nub of what's going on quicker. Mm-hmm. Might help. I don't want to start seeming like this hacking person, but I think the audience need something to hang their hat on. early on, and they're not really getting it. They're just getting, especially as a modern audience has that delay of going, I need 5 minutes to click into this verse speaking what you were doing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, explicating what's going on. And it could just be simply that we just give Ignatius and Era a little couple of two line thing of going, ah, this is what the Black Queen's pawn is trying to do. They've sort of vaguely said it, but they haven't said it. Nobody's saying it. They're suggesting it. And it's, yeah. I love you, Middleton. I also kind of hate you. It's exactly the kind of writing I love in many ways because, you know, he's not just telling us, he's showing us. We can't see it. It's the wrong medium. Mm. It's the fact that the speech at the beginning, so the Black Queen's pawn at the very top of the scene, the speeches I was doing, the softening up, her first two speeches aren't to you. They're just, I am making a speech about how beautiful this this other person is. And you're going, oh, is it talking about me? I think that's what it means. I think that's what was going on. I could be wrong. I may have got it completely wrong now because I'm struggling slightly. And then you have an aside where you're saying, oh, is she talking about me? And you get lured in. Mm. But it's like they never say hello.
No, it's a question. When do they actually start directly speaking to each other there?
Mm. I think it's somewhere in the Blessed Things Prevail with, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Or you step in after that. It's like it's saying, ah, yes, the groundwork firmer. And then that's when you step in and say, it have been all my glory to be firm in what I have professed. And it's like, you know, but again, it's a tricky one. I want another run at this sequence, just to try and see if that helps. So
it was interesting. I thought I was really overplaying Black Bishop's pawn, but probably not.
Well, there is a question because yes, he is a total bastard. But I think also you need to win over the White Queen's pawns in the sense that you need to be coming across as terribly earnest. And then when you do the asides, it's a is sort of where you go with it. So I think that might be a direction there.
His asides are delicious and wonderful. There's some glorious lines in there. And I love the fact that he then gives her a prayer book.
Oh, yeah, it's like, I need to give her something to stay on side. Here, have a free gift. I've got hundreds of them that I keep in back of the thing. Okay, let's any other thoughts before we give that one another crack and then we'll close the session?
I can think of.
Okay, let's have another little crack at the opening of Act 1, Scene 1. I'm the Black Queen's pawn. Lindsay remains the White Queen's pawn. And Greg remains the Black Queen's pawn. It's important to keep remind... not the Black Queen's pawn, the Black Bishop's pawn. Ah! You can understand why I'm taking this slowly. Okay. I ne'er see that face, but my pity rises when I behold so clear a masterpiece of heaven's art wrought out of dust and ashes, and at next thought to give her lost eternally in being not ours, but the daughter of heresy, or my soul bleeds at mine eyes.
Where should truth speak if not in such a sorrow? Their tears... plainly. Beshrew me if she weep not heartily. What is my peace to her to take such pains in't? If I wander to loss and with broad eyes yet miss the path she can run blindfold in through often exercise, why should my oversight, though in the best game that e'er Christian lost, raise the least spring of pity in her eyes? It's doubtless a great charity, and no virtue could win me surer.
Oh, blessed things prevail with. If ever goodness made a gracious promise, it is in yonder look What little pains would build a fort for virtue to all memory, and that sweet creature were the groundwork firmer.
It hath been all my glory to be firm in what I have professed.
That is the enemy that steals your strength away and fights against you, disarms your soul even in the heat of battle. Your firmness that way makes you more infirm for the right Christian conflict. There I spied a zealous primitive sparkle, but now flew from your devoted eye, able to blow up all the heresies that ever sat in council with your spirit. And here comes he whose sanctimonious breath will make that spark aflame, lit. List to him, virgin, at whose first entrance princes will fall prostrate. Women are weaker vessels.
By my penitence, a comely presentation, and the habit to admiration reverend.
But the heart, lady, so meek, that as you see good charity pictured still, with young ones in her arms, so will he cherish all his young, tractable, sweet, obedient daughters, even in his bosom, in his own dear bosom. I am myself a secular Jesuitess, as many ladies are of worth and greatness. A second sort are Jesuits in voto, giving their vow unto the general, Father General. That's the black bishop of our house, whose pawn this gentleman now stands for, to receive the college habit at his holy pleasure.
But how are those in voto employed, lady, till they receive the habit?
Oh, they're not idle. He finds them all true labourers in the work of the universal monarchy, which he and his disciples principally aim at. Those are maintained in many courts and palaces, and are induced by noble personages into great princes' services, and prove some councillors of state, some secretaries, all serving in notes of intelligence, as parish clerks, their mortuary bills, to the Father General. So are designs oft-times prevented, and important secrets of states discovered, yet no author found. But they suspected oft that are most sound. This mystery is too deep yet for your entrance, and I offend to set your zeal so back. Checked by obedience with desire to hasten your progress to perfection, I permit you to the great worker's hands, to whose grave worth I fit my reverence, as to you my wishes.
Just find her supple.
There's a little passage made.
Oh, let me contemplate with holy wonder, season my excess, and by degrees approach the sanctuary of unmatched beauty, set in grace and goodness amongst the daughters of men. I have not found a more catholical aspect. That eye doth promise single life and meek obedience. Upon those lips the sweet fresh buds of youth, a holy dew of prayer lies, like pearl dropped from the opening eyelids of the morn upon the bashful rose. How beautifully a gentle fast, not rigorously imposed, would look upon that cheek. And how delightfully the courteous physic of a tender penance, whose utmost cruelty should not exceed the first fear of a bride to beat down frailty, would work to sound health your long festered judgment, and make your merit, which though erring ignorance appears but spotted righteousness in me, far clearer than the innocence of infants.
To that good work I bow, and will become obedience's humblest daughter, since I find the assistance of a sacred strength to aid me. The labour is as easy to serve virtue the right way, since 'tis she I ever served in my desire, though I transgressed in judgment.
That's easily absolved amongst the rest. You shall not find the virtue that you serve now a sharp and cruel mistress. Her ears open to all your supplications. You may boldly and safely let in the most secret sin into her knowledge, which, like vanished man, never returns into the world again. Fate locks not up more truly.
To the guilty, that may appear some benefit.
Who's so innocent that never stands in need on it in some kind? If every thought we were blabs that so confessed, the very air we breathe would be unblessed. Now to the work indeed, which is to catch her inclination. That's the special use we make of all our practice in all kingdoms. No, for by discovering their most secret frailties, things which once ours, they must not hide from us. That's the first article in the creed we teach them. Finding to what point their blood most inclines, no best to apt them in than to our desire. Daughter, the sooner you disperse your errors, the sooner you make haste to your recovery. You must part with them to be nice or modest towards the good action is to imitate the bashfulness of one conceals, and also for the uncomely parts the tumour vexes till it be past cure. Resolve you thus, fair lady, the privatest thoughts that runs to hide itself into the most secret corner of your heart now must be of my acquaintance, so familiarly never she friend of your night counsels nearer.
I stand not much in fear of any action, guilty of that black time, most noble holiness. I must confess, as in a sacred temple, thronged with an auditory, some come rather to feed on human object than to taste of angels' food. So in the congregation of quick thoughts, which are more infinite than such assemblies, I cannot with truth's safety speak for all. Some have been wanderers, some fond, some sinful. But those found ever but poor entertainment. They had small encouragement to come again. The single life, which strongly I profess now, heaven pardon me, I was about to part from.
Then you have passed through love?
But left no stain in all my passage, sir, no print of wrong for the most chaste maid that may trace my footsteps.
How came you off so clear?
I was discharged by an inhuman accident, which modesty forbids me to put any language to.
How you forget yourself. All actions clad in their proper language, though most sordid, my ear is bound by duty to let in and lock up everlastingly. Shall I help you? He was not found to answer his creation. A vestal virgin in a slip of grace could not deliver man's loss most modestlier. 'Twas the white bishop's pawn.
The same, blessed sir.
An heretic, well pickled.
By base treachery and violence prepared by his competitor, the black knight's pawn, whom I shall ever hate for it.
'Twas of revenges the unmanliest way that ever rival took, a villainy that for your sake I'll never absolve him of.
I wish it not so heavy.
He must feel it. I never yet gave absolution to any crime of that unmanning nature. It seems that you refused him for defect, that in you stand not pure from the desire that other women have in ends of marriage. Pardon my boldness, if I sift your goodness to the last grain.
I reverence your pains, sir, and must acknowledge custom to enjoy what other women challenge and possess more ruled me than desire. For my desires dwell all in ignorance, and I'll never wish to know that fond way may redeem em thence.
I never was so taken, beset doubly now with her judgment. What a strength it puts forth. I bring work nearer to you. When you've seen a masterpiece of man composed by heaven for a great prince's favour, kingdom's love. So exact envy could not find a place to stick a blot on a person or on fame. Have you not found ambition swell your wish then, and desire stir your blood?
By virtue, never. I've only in the dignity of the creature admired the maker's glory.
She's incredible. A second siege must not fall off so tamely. She's one of those must be informed to know a daughter's duty, which some take untaught. Modesty brings her behind and much. My old means I must fly to. Yes, 'tis it. Please you peruse this small tract of obedience. 'Twill help you forward well.
Sir, that's a virtue I've ever thought on with a special reverence.
You will conceive by that my power, your duty.
The knowledge will be precious of both, sir.
What makes yon troubler of all Christian waters so near that blessed spring? But that I know her goodness is the rock from whence it issues, unmovable as fast, would more afflict me than all my sufferings for her, which, so long as she holds constant to the house she comes of, the whiteness of the cause, the size, the quality, and sacrifices to her worth and virtue, and though confined in my religious joys, I marry her and possess her. Says the white bishop's pawn. A whole separate question. As we, in a moment, will have various people entering into the scene to complicate it, but also give a bit more context. There's about a third of the scene left to go. As you're basically... He's white bishop's pawn there to say, oh, he's a wrong'un. You shouldn't be talking to him in a side. And then, of course, you actually get the person who you were going to marry, but is gelded, enters, and the person who gelded him as well. And I'm just wondering whether we could possibly find a way of making that happen earlier. We might have to put in some explication just to explicitly have the black bishop's pawn says he's chopped his ghoulies off or something. Mm. Just because I think it's still, even with... it was a lot clearer. There's still a lot of it, though. I do feel we need to get to the plot quicker.
That explanation that you gave really helped both of us, I think, because suddenly a whole mass of text that just made zero or very little sense, suddenly you could get... both of us, I know, were probably by that point going, all right, yeah, now I know what I'm saying. I can put some meaning into it. Rather than just going, what the bloody hell are we going on about? There's some great lines in there when you know what's happened.
Hmm. I was wondering, I think this might, just in terms of cuts, I know this might not work for the sort of Cold War thing, but there was a bit that I thought, where is it? I thought, is this really... So it's that section where the White Queen's pawn says, but how are those in voto employed, lady, till they receive their habit? And the Black Queen's pawn kind of does this sort of social commentary thing about where these... as yet uninhabited Jesuits sort of work. And I did wonder the actual relevance to the plot at this point of that.
It's weird, actually, even with the context of the original play, because she's kind of giving the game away of going, we're spies. That's what priests are. We're here to do spy work, which later on is very, very explicit. You basically go into the office of the bishop and it's like, oh no, we've been rumbled. Burn all the papers, quick! Stuff. And they have they go through their whole net. And it just seems weird they're telling the White Queen's pawn this early. That's not the game yet, surely.
Yeah, because if she says... But how are those in Voto employed, lady, till they receive their habit? And then the Black Queen's Prawn says, this mystery is too deep yet for your entrance, and I offend to set your zeal so back. I don't know if that quite works, but it's basically saying there is an answer to that question, but you're not yet ready to know it.
Which makes a lot more sense.
And still gives the nice sort of entrance build-up to the Black Bishop's Pawn. We do need to number these characters or give them names.
Well, this is the problem, is, you know, there are some who are quite straightforward. The thing is, the primaries are easy. You know, the White Knight, the White King, they're all fine. The moment you add pawn to the end, it just all starts falling apart. I mean, a lot of the time, I don't think it's going to be a massive problem, but every so often it is just a massive problem. And you know, the ones that have appeared in the collected Middleton aren't a solution. A solution to reading it. They're not a solution to this problem that we have. And you know, we don't have to find all the answers yet. I think it's a matter of actually just maybe moving some material around a bit. And we'll know more about that when we look at the end of the scene, whether we can break up this conflab a little bit with examples when you mention things. And also the level of detail that the Black Queen's Pawn goes into is probably not essential. But it's really helpful to get a sense of it now, rather than just going in cold saying, right, I'll do things to it. I mean, the whole Cold War thing might not work. I mean, it might be a thing. Because we've still got to have the religion in there, because the religion is the cover. We can't, you know, just make them spies, or, you know, they're on the diplomatic mission. I mean, we'd have to rewrite in a way that I don't think would be fair. I don't think that's inherently wrong to do. I think if someone wanted to do that further down the line, that's absolutely cool, because I don't gatekeep what people want to do with these texts. All the authors are dead. Do what you like. But I don't think that's what we're here to do at this stage. I think we've got to try and keep as much Middleton as possible, but also present an engaging and understandable audio experience.
Yeah. I'm just wondering about sort of McCarthyism or something like that. Again, random ideas coming in. Particular
other conflicts that we can put in, because it's a diplomatic conflict. I mean, it's the kind of thing that might be happening, you know, behind the scenes at COP at the moment. You know, because there are people who are nominally your enemy or have been your enemy, who are pretending to be on your friends now. And you're trying to negotiate treaties and things, but you've got people undermining at every turn.
And it gets
more straightforward later on as well.
So the White Queen's Pawn could be like, you know, an environmental activist, you know, Greenpeace leader, or, you know, something like that, that kind of thing at COP. And randomly.
Yeah, she's an easy mark. I mean, that's the idea. You know, she's emotionally vulnerable at this moment. She's thinking about her life in the context of the play. You know, she's thinking about changing her confession. And, you know, at which point the hit squad swoops to try and scoop her up. I mean, let's be clear, they fail. This goes nowhere. It goes very rapey, in fact. Basically, the Bishop's Pawn corners the White Queen and totally mucks up the plan of the Black Bishop and everybody else. They're going, could you not have waited till after we finished our spying thing? We now have to destroy all the paperwork and get out of Dodge. At which point they then tried to destroy the White Queen Pawn's reputation. Publicly, they publicly shame her again, which couldn't be more topical in so many ways. I mean, this play is doing so many really clever things. The only real problem is the beginning. Once you get into it, we're fine.
Followed by the middle and the end.
How do we explicate that they're all pawns in a without going too Jesuity about, you know, Ignatius? How do we explain what's going on with the White Queen's pawn at the beginning? And I think we're slightly closer to the answer, if there is an answer. This session gives me a way to go away and start making some adjustments. And
I think it would definitely help to explore potential worlds that this particular text could be put in that would help clarify it. Don't know what that world is yet, but I think it would definitely help to do that.
I think the second time, not that it matters particularly, but it's just useful note for anyone who comes forward in the Black Bishop's Pawn later. Yes, I think I got the balance better between slimy and sexy, sexual slimy like that time.
Yeah,
I think his sides need to be fairly explicitly cringy from him, but he's so smooth when he's talking to him. I can see the start of what happens almost in that now, because he's horrific. It's painful to read and listen to, I'm sure. Really interesting play. Still love it.
Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a constant abuse of power. And the thing is, actually, when the abuse of power is you know, noted, you know, the black pieces just go, you know, okay, we'll just have to move you on to a different parish. And you're just going, my word, how little has changed in 400 years when you have someone who is a problem. I mean, it's you know, everyone just sort of shrugs, just going, oh, it's happened, has it? Oh, God, couldn't you have waited? You know, there's no, that was a bad thing you should not have done at any point from those characters. It's a very clever play on many ways, and we're going to have a lot of time to do more tidy up and play around and different things. If you have a thoughts on what we're doing here, remember, we are just thinking out loud. Not all of this is stuff we will enact. Thoughts, suggestions, send them our way. We can be found on online at on the Twitterverse at Beyond Shakes. We can be found. We have a Patreon page. You can become a patron and support our work and help pay people to actually be in the Fullcast audio adaptation when it comes to pass. Just generally get in touch. Go to the website beyondshakespeare.org for all the interesting things. And you can get involved in the readings that we do and this kind of work by signing up. We do exploring sessions many times a week, and they're open to all. Anyone can join us. So if you fancy being one of us, become one of us. Come along and join us. All that remains is to thank all our wonderful readers for their wonderful reading. Thank you, Lindsay. Thank you, Greg. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And goodbye.